Dimmel on the Bears, a little past the middle of the arm of Lyman against Shoddy. Hello?
Shoddy?
Lyman against Shoddy, just past the middle of Saturday Dimmel on the Bears. All right, so the subject of the Perek is... Yeah. The subject of the Perek has been Gidon Osher, so we digressed yesterday. Most of the discussion yesterday was actually about other things, that you have to be menacher for meat, chalev and certain veins and blood vessels and whatnot. But now we're going to get back to, for a moment, to Gidon Osher. Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, Shnei Gidin Hei. In the leg of an animal, in the back legs of an animal, there are two major Gidin that you have to be concerned about. Hapnimi Samoch Lesem, the inner one, which is closer to the bone, Osir, that one is Osir Daraita, that is the Gidin Asher. V'chayav Nolav, and a person East City's Chayav Malchus. Tchitzen Samoch Lebasar, the outer one, which is closer to the flesh, Osir v'ein chayav nolav. That one, a person is osir to eat, but a person is not chayav malchus for it because it's only osir medraban.
Why is that?
Because it's osir medraban.
The outer one.
The outer one, yeah. So at the beginning of the parak, we had this concept a few days ago, and Rashi over there explained that the pnimi, you know, that the gidan nosha is called pnimi because it is closer to the, because he said it's closer to the, to the inner side of the leg, because it's on the side of the leg that faces closer than the other one. In other words, if here's one leg and here's the other leg of an animal, the Gidon Osher is closer to the inside of the leg, to the medial side of the leg, facing the other one, whereas the Gidon Chitzen, the other one being the Gidon Chitzen, one second, is, Rashi learns, is on the outer side of the yarech, which is a bit of a problem if you understand them as being the sciatic nerve and the femoral nerve, because it's actually the other way around. The sciatic nerve is closer to the outside, the femoral nerve is more towards the inside. They have a different explanation, which is the
sciatic nerve.
The sciatic nerve is not as far into the leg as the femoral nerve. So if you understand the Gidah Pnimi to be this and the Gidah Chitzen to be this, which is one way of understanding, and that is how Ashkenazim and most Sfaradim hold, then it doesn't fit with the words of Rashi so well. Tosfos over here brings a different explanation that Rashi says, that the Pnimi is closer, that the Pnimi, the actual Gidah Nosha, is called that because it's closer to the bone, as the Gemara is saying over here, and the Chitzen, the bones of the leg, the thigh bone in particular. Because the Gidon Osher, this is the nerve, and it's closer to the bone, and then the Chitzen is called that because it's closer to the flesh, it's further away from the bone. Yeah, we're talking about the Yerech, is the thigh, is this area of the animal. In practice, I mean, they extend down in the leg, so they extend throughout the leg, but yeah. Anyway, so that's one way. The other way of understanding is that the Gidah Pnimi is the continuation of the sciatic nerve that goes down the leg, or the whole thing, from the top to the bottom. And then the Gidah Chitzen would be this one that branches off from it and goes along the front of the leg. Right. Okay, so that's what I'm saying. You have two different minhagim, what exactly they are. Anyway, the point is that there's one which is also Daraisa and one which is also Dirabon.
But we don't know which one.
Again, everybody agrees the Gidah Pnimi is the sciatic nerve. The Gidah Chitzen, you have two different understandings. You have one understanding is that it's the femoral nerve, this thing, and the other one is that it's the peroneal nerve, which is this thing.
Okay.
But
so
everybody agrees the Gidah Pnimi is the one that's there. Right. Okay. So the question is, V'hatanya Pnimi Samoch Lebasar. Now we just defined that the Pnimi, the inner one, is closer to the bone. But we have another braisa that says the Gidah Pnimi, the inner one, which is the sciatic nerve, is Samoch Lebasar, is closer to the flesh. So what is it? Is it closer to the bone or to the flesh? Amar Rav Acha, Amar Rav Kahana, Ikludi Miklid. What it is it starts out going outside of the flesh. It starts going superficially over the muscle, but then it goes into it. Ikludi Miklid comes from a word that means a key. So it goes into the flesh, it goes into the muscles further down, like a key going into a lock. So therefore, at that point, it can be described as samoch lebasar. So the question is, another braisa, v'altanya chitzin samoch lechem. We have another braisa that describes the gidah chitzin, which we said is only also the rabbanon, that calls it closer to the bone. And we said before, we defined it as samoch lebasar, that's closer to the flesh, to the muscles.
That's the
peroneal or the femoral, as the case may be. And the answer is, Amar Rav Yehuda, Hecha de Pari Tabchi. Yes, but what it is where you have a place on the thigh that the butchers typically open up when they're starting to dissect the animal and to take and to do the nicker and all. There's a certain area where they usually open it up and then start working from there. That is an area Rashi describes. It's where the thigh is near the tail. The end of that gid is closer to the bone. Further down, it's further away from the bone and closer to the flesh. So hecha de pari tabchi, where the butchers open it up to start doing the tigering, then it's close to the bone. After that, it continues down, going more towards more in the muscles and less closer to the bone. Nicker is to take away all the gidanosha and all the things around it and all the fat and all the blood vessels and whatever. Yeah, because that whole process is called nicker.
It would be much easier if they had
if they had pictures, I guess.
No, not pictures. If they had defined the anatomy, one is the nerve of the hip, the other one is the nerve.
They defined it as best they could. We have a machloekas as a result of it. Okay, let's go on. Fine. Okay. Itmar. So now we have a discussion.
So what do you conclude?
So the conclusion is that's all. So we have one braisa that we have Rabbi Yehuda telling us in the name of Shmuel that the pnimi, which is the gid anasha, that's also daraisa, is closer to the bone. But we have a braisa that mentions it closer to the flesh because afterwards, as it goes down, it goes into the flesh like a key going into a keyhole. And the chitzen, which we're saying is also the rabbanon, is somoch labasar. Most of it is closer to the muscles rather than to the bone. But you have in one particular area of the leg, hecha de pari tavchi, where the butchers open it up, at that point it's closer to the bone. So each one of them has a part of it that's closer to the bone and another part that's closer to the flesh, but you have they can be described, when you describe the majority of the gid, it can be described one way or the other. Okay. It's math.
No conclusion.
Well, no conclusion. We have a conclusion. We have a pnimi and we have a chitzen. Which one is the chitzen? That you have different.
We have three nerves.
Okay. Again, what the pnimi is, we know for sure. The pnimi is the sciatic nerve. Everybody agrees to that. The question is what? Yeah. The question is what is the chitzen? That you have two different benachim. Exactly. Okay. All right. Itmar. Tabach shenimsa chayl of asra. If you have a butcher, or tabach actually means more like a shoychet, where, and usually, as Rashi explains, he's usually the one who does nikur. So if afterwards he did nikur on meat, and afterwards you found chaylev that he missed, so what do you do about him? First of all, how much has to be left for it to be a problem? Rabbi Yehuda says, even if he only left over a piece the size of a barley grain, then it's a problem. Rabbi Yechanan Amar B'Kazayis, and Rabbi Yechanan says only if he left over a Kazayis. Mefarshim explains the reason why we're mentioning Tabach over here is because the point is that the Tabach is typically the one who does the Nikur, and therefore when you buy a piece of meat from a Tabach, you're entitled to assume that the Nikur has been done. And that's why if he leaves over some Chalev and then you could have ended up eating it, it's a real problem. If you have in places where they have the Shostim and the Menachrim are two different groups of people, well, then obviously it's not the Tabach is responsible, then it's the Menachrim is responsible. By the way, the Maharshal brings something. He says that the Maharam Min, in a generation or two before him, made a practice of it that when you have every Menachrim should have a second one who checks after him to make sure that he didn't leave anything behind. First of all, two heads are better than one. It's more likely anything that was missed will be found. Well, generally. But second of all, okay, again, not together. One checks, and then the other one checks after him to make sure he didn't miss anything. And second of all, also, the point is, the first Menachrim was likely to be more careful in the first place because this way he knows that there's a second person checking up after him. He's going to want to look good. And therefore, the Maharshal recommends that as a practice, that you should do like that.
Two.
Okay, that you should have two. Right. Okay. So there are. Most of them are in the back half of the animal, which is why we were discussing yesterday. Nowadays, in most countries, the minhag has developed to not really minhag, whatever. It doesn't really necessarily have the force of a minhag, but whatever. The practice has developed to not bother with it. It's not really cost-effective, and therefore they just sell the whole back half of the animal to goyim. Because you have the chaylev, you have gidanosha, and you have most of the chalavim, as well as the gidanosha, and everything else mostly on the back half of the animal. Okay, let's go on. V'loy pligi, and the Gemara of v'loy pligi, so the Papa says there's actually not really a machloikas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yechanan, where Rabbi Yehuda is saying that if he left over even a barley grain size piece of chaylev, then it's a problem, and Rabbi Yechanan says a kizayis. It's not really a machloikas. Kan la'al koysay, kan la'abroi. One is how much needs to be left. Hello, how much needs to be left for him to give him malchus? That would be only if he left over as much as a kizayis. candelabra, and the other one would be to fire him. That you would do even if he only left over a piece the size of a barley grain. So if he leaves over Kazayas, then not only you fire him, but you also give him Malchus. If he leaves over only a Sora, then you don't give him Malchus, but you do fire him.
A Sora of the...
Of Chalev. No, that's what we're talking about. Chalev. Of Chalev, which is also Daraisi. By the way, the Rambam says this is only as far as Chalev and things that are also Daraisi. If it's, for example, we talked about yesterday, various membranes in the body that are also only Darabonon because they're associated with Chalev. Those, if he leaves them behind, we don't fire him and we don't give him Malchus. We just warn him to be more careful. If he leaves over a barley grain, then you count a barley grain only if it's in one place. The amount of a kazayas, it doesn't even necessarily have to be one kazayas in one place. Even if it's broken up in two or three places, as long as there's a kazayas total, that would be enough to give him malchus. The hilchasa and the bottom line halacha is exactly that. To give him malchus, it would have to be that he left over a kazayas or more. La'abre, because sa'ora, to fire him, you do that even if he only left over a sa'ora. And then at that point, the Mephoshim say, the Ran says, and later Rishonim and Achronim talk about, that basically the Dayanim, it's up to the discretion of the Dayanim what he needs to do at that point in order to be reinstated in good standing. To be able to get back his job, right? Then we said in the Mishnah, Ena tabach and nemon in chulo. We said in the Mishnah that Reb Meir had said that. So what did we say? We said that the tabachim, that the shochtim and the butchers, whatever, are not trustworthy about the gid anosha. You have to check to make sure the gid anosha was removed. And so says Reb Meir. And the Chachamim said, no, you can trust the tabach about the gid anosha and also about chela. So let's talk about it first. Even though the Mishnah starts by saying that they're not trustworthy, later on the Chachamim changed their mind and said Ne'emonim, we can trust the Tabachim. Amar Rav Nachman, Achshu Dari. So Rav Nachman says, what's going on over here? What does that mean? That originally we held the halacha as like a mayor, and then we changed our mind, and then Chachamim changed their mind and decided the halacha is like the Chachamim. What would that imply? The Doris have gotten better? That in Rameir's times they weren't trustworthy, and in later times they are. Yuridus Adurus. If they weren't trustworthy in earlier times, then Achshur Maloshin Kosher. Have the generations become more kosher? The answer is no. Like this, Meikra Dehavu Savri La Kura Meir La Havu Mehemi. What happened is like this. Originally the Chachamim held like Rameir. Now we learned in the Mishnah. Not in the Mishnah so much, we didn't talk about it in a Braise. In the Gemara, we talked about that the mayor holds that you have to dig out all the various branches of the Gid Anosha. So therefore, it's a big tircha to do that. So as long as the Chachamim hold like the mayor, then we can't trust the Tabachim on that, because we can't trust that they went to the trouble of doing all that. They might have just done whatever they feel like and left the rest. All of a sudden, Savri, Rabbi Yehuda, later on, the Chachamim held like Rabbi Yehuda, who says you don't need to dig for all the branches. All you need to do is just remove certain parts of the Gid Anosha. So that's much easier to do.
Why did they change their mind about what had to be removed and what had not?
The Chachamim changed their mind. First they passed him like Rabbi Meir. Later on, they passed him like Rabbi Yehuda. They're entitled to change their mind. They're entitled to pass him.
They need a reason.
They don't need a reason. They have Rabbi Meir and you have Rabbi Yehuda. You're entitled to pick one opinion over the other. So therefore, once we say like Rabbi Yehuda, then name on him. However, there are those who learn Reb Chiya bar Abba's statement as referring to the Sefer, where we say in the Mishnah of Chachamim Nemonin Ola Bal Chelev, that the Chachamim say that butchers are trustworthy about the Gid Anosha, that they removed it, and about Chelev. So on that, Amar Reb Chiya bar Abba, Amar Reb Yechanan, Chazru Loima Ein Nemonin. That on that, Reb Chiya bar Abba says later on, in the name of Reb Yechanan, that later on the Chachamim changed their mind and said they're not trustworthy. So the first version is Mekel. We're saying that originally they passed him like Reb Meir. Later on, they came to pass him like Reb Yehuda. Therefore, it comes out of Kula. The second version, and usually the halacha in the Gemara is like a second version of a discussion, means first they trusted them and then later not. But here we also have, Om Rav Nachman bezman hazeh ne'emon. But then Rav Nachman goes on to say, but in our time, they are trustworthy again. So again, the question is, he's saying that now the question is, again, Achshu Dori, have the generation's gotten better? The answer is like this: Meikra savrua k'Rabbi Yehuda. It's the other way around. Originally, the Chachamim held like Rabbi Yehuda that you don't need to remove the entire Gid Anosha, just the superficial parts of it. So that's an easy thing to do. Therefore, they could trust them. Hoder savrua k'Rabbi Meir. Later on, the Chachamim changed their mind and passed him like Rabbi Meir. So now what happens is like this. What happens once the halacha is passed in like a mayor, as a natural thing, the menachrim and the shochtim are not automatically going to switch over because it takes time. They're used to doing it the old way. So kamo dehavu dechiru leilu of Yehuda, loy mehemni. So what happens is like this. When Rabbi Chiya bar Abba is telling us that the butchers are not trustworthy, we're talking about as long as there were still people who remembered that they used to do it, as they remembered how it was done according to Rabbi Yehuda. So then you can't trust the shochtim in general about that they to say that they removed the entire Gidanasha because now the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, but they may, the halacha is like Rabbi Meir rather, but they may still be following the old Rabbi Yehuda method that they were taught when they were younger. Bahashka, but now in Rabbi Nachman's time, Dan Chiyuha, the Rabbi Yehuda, where they've forgotten, there's no shochtim anymore. All the old shochtim who not corrupt. They were entitled to do like Rabbi Yehuda back when they learned it. When they learned it 60 years ago, the halacha was like Rabbi Yehuda. So now they didn't get used to, so when they got older, they didn't get used to the new halacha. So they're still following their usual practice and they continue doing like Rabbi Meir. Therefore, we can't trust that they continue doing like Rabbi Yehuda rather. Therefore, we can't trust them that they removed it according to Rabbi Meir's shita. Eventually, all of those old, that's not corruption. They couldn't. It's a hard thing to get used to a new way of doing things. To continue doing things the way you did them for the last 50 years. Eventually, all those menachrim, eventually all those shochtim, whatever, died or retired or whatever. At that point, all the new generation of shochtim and bodkim have all been trained according to the mayor's shitta that you have to remove the whole thing. Therefore, mehemni, now we can trust them again because now they learn from when they first start learning nikkur that they have to remove the entire thing, and therefore we can trust them that they did it.
So you're saying basically the fact they didn't follow the new halacha was by oversight.
It could have been by oversight. Yeah, it's not necessarily they're doing it because they're bad people, but just they're used to. They're used to
new
doing.
The halacha caused them a lot.
That may be, but that's... Okay, the point remains. Let's not get into it. Come on, we have learning to do. The point is that there was a period of time after the halacha was passed in like Rav Meir, who was more machmer, and says you have to remove the entire Gidanosha and all its branches, and you still had menachrim who are still used to doing it the old way, and therefore you can't necessarily, if they say that they removed it the way Rav Meir says, not necessarily can you trust them, because they might still be used to doing it the way Rav Yehuda says, which fine, back when they learned it, that was legitimate.
Sure.
So yeah, okay. So that's the point. So that is why we go back and forth. That is why we're saying, according to the second version, that Mishnah said that they're trust, that we can trust them. Later on, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba says we can't trust them. And then Rabbi Nachman says we can trust them again. That's
with the new generation.
With the new generation. Right. Okay. Then the Mishnah had said, Ba'ala Chelev, that you can also trust the butchers about Chelev, that it was removed. So the question is, Chelev mandachar shmei. Who said anything about Chelev in the Mishnah? All we said is Rav Meir said you can't trust them about taking out the Gidanosha, and the Chacham say you could. Where does Chelev come in? Rav Meir didn't say anything about Chelev. The answer is, that's exactly it. Tachikoma. Ein nemon an olav ala Chelev. Rav Meir had said you can't trust them about the Gidanosha or about Chelev for the same reason. It's a big tircha to take out all the Chelev and make sure that all of it is gone. You can trust them because they're trained, they know what they're doing, and also they know, as we said, that if anything is found that they left behind, then they're going to be in big trouble. They're going to be fired and or given malchus, so therefore they're capable.
And
Rav Meir didn't think so. Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. Okay, so that's that. Next Mishnah. Mishnah says, Sheleach Adam Yerach La'ovid Tichavim, Shegid Anosha B'Socha, a person is allowed to send as a present to a goy a thigh of an animal that has a Gid Anosha still in it. The reason is, we're not concerned that the goy may turn around and sell the thigh to a yid, and then the yid is going to end up eating it with the Gid Anosha is still inside. Because the place of the Gid Anosha is noticeable. Since the thigh is still whole, you would easily be able to tell if the Gid Anosha was removed.
So the point is, therefore, you're
allowed to give it to the goy intact, and there's no problem that he may go and sell it to a yid, and the yid is going to end up eating it as is. Now, the question we have to deal with, which is what the Gemara is going to first take up, is what is a Jew doing buying meat from a goy anyway? If I take a piece of meat and give it to John, the goy, why is there any concern that you are going to be going and buying meat from John? On the face of it, any meat that he has in his possession is today for meat anyway, so what is even the chash? So that's what we're going to deal with in the Gemara. Okay, so the Gemara says, Shleima in. Okay, so what are we saying? You're allowed to give the thigh to the goy when it's whole. Apparently, though, the implication is you're taken not allowed to give it to him when it's cut up unless the gid anosha is removed. Because if you have cuts in that area, it's going to look like the gid anosha is removed and the yid is not going to realize. So the question is, b'maya skin, and what is the scenario over here that we have any possibility that a Jew is going to be buying meat from a goy? That's the question. That's what we have to figure out. What's the scenario? How could such a thing be allowed? Now, you had many places, you had places in the world in those days where all of the butchers and everybody who's involved in the meat business in a particular place is a Jew. So therefore, in places like that, there's not really a problem that meat that you buy from a goy may be from a trefer animal that the goyim shechted themselves. Okay, you could have the occasional time that a goy decides to kill to kill an animal in a backyard or something, but it's not very common, and you're allowed, and you're able to go according to the rov. In the place where all the shochtim are Jews. And by the way, I mean, so first of all, we're going to see in our Gemara that was in some places a common situation. But you also have, for example, you have a Mishnah, which we're going to, the Gemara is going to quote it later on in Daf Tzadik Hei. You have a case in a Mishnah where you have 10 butcher shops in town, 9 that sell kosher meat and only 1 that sells kosher meat. So we see that there were places where that's how it was, where the preponderance, or in this case, all of the people who shecht are Jews. So therefore, on that basis, you shouldn't have a problem. Now, the only issue is, in such places, is what happens if you have a nevela or a trefa. Jews can't eat it. Of necessity, you're selling it to goyim. But how do you avoid the situation? So now you're telling me in a place like that, any meat that's in a goy's possession came from a Jewish butcher, fine. So you don't have to worry that it was from a trefa species or whatever, but don't have to worry that it was a nevela or a trefa. So there were different ways in different places. In different places, they had different ways of dealing with that kind of situation. One way of doing it, one way was in some places, okay, so they sell meat to the goyim, they don't announce that there were nevelos or trefas or whatever. In such places, you're taka not allowed to buy meat from a goy, because it may have been from a nevela or a trefa. Then there were places, the Gemara is going to explain that machrizin, where any time, on any given day, where in the butcher's shops, in the schlachthäuses, where there was a nevela or a trefa, they would make an announcement in town. Today, it doesn't matter. Maybe it was in Eretz Yisrael, maybe it was in Babel, whatever it was, wherever places in the world there could have been that all the shochtim in town are Jews. But what you would have is, in some such places, they had the minhag that machrizin, that any day that there was a nevela or a trefa, they would make a public announcement, today there was a nevela or a trefa. And therefore, that amounts to telling the Jews, today, don't be buying meat from goyim, because if we sell them a piece, it might be a nevela or a trefa, and then if you turn around and buy it from them, then you're going to be buying trefa meat. But the other days, whenever there's no announcement, then you would be able to buy meat from the goyim, because again, any meat that the goyim have in their possession in such places, pretty much all of it comes comes from the shochtim. Again, is it possible that he shechted in his backyard? It's possible, but it's not common enough for us to have to worry about it.
It's only for one day?
Well, if on Monday they had a trefa or a nevela and they made an announcement, fine. If you buy meat from the goy on Tuesday, if it was yesterday's meat, you'll be able to tell. Yesterday's meat is not quite as fresh as today's, so you'll be able to tell that it was from yesterday. But on Tuesday, there's no announcement, therefore you'd be allowed to buy from the goy in such places. So that's what we have to figure out. The Maya skin, what's the scenario in our Mishnah that you're able to sell, you're able to give the complete yerech to the goy without having to worry about, without having to worry that a Jew will buy it from him? And the implication that if you cut it without actually taking out the gid anosha, then you're not allowed to. Which kind of place are we talking about? Ilema b'makom she'ein machrizin. Are we talking about a place where they don't have the minhag to make such announcements? If there's a nevela or a trefa, they don't make such an announcement. They're always selling meat to both Jews and goyim, and there's no announcement ever made. Well, then that's the question. Chatuchad nami lishter. In such places, you should even be able to sell him a piece of meat that has a cut in the leg without the gid anosha having been removed. You should be able to give it to him, because no Jew is going to be buying meat from the goyim ever, because you never know. You might be buying today from meat. El abamakam shemachrizin.
There's no announcement.
That when there's no announcement, exactly.
Meat can be available.
That's the point.
That's why
we're trying to figure out the scenario. New El abamakam shemachrizin. So are we talking about a place where they do make such announcements? Whenever on any given day there's a nevela or a trefa, there's a public announcement made, today there was a nevela or today there was a trefa, so be careful. Well then, in such places, shleima nami le lishterle. In such places, you shouldn't be allowed to give the goy a whole uncut thigh either. dechotichlei or mazvinlei, because what might the goy do? The goy might cut, might make a cut in the leg, and it'll look superficially as though the gid anosha was removed, and then a Jew is going to buy it for him, and in such places a Jew is allowed to buy meat from him unless an announcement was made that day, and he's going to think the gid anosha was removed, and really it wasn't, and he's going to eat gid anosha. So why is the Mishnah telling us that, let's assume, fine, we have to assume the Mishnah is talking about a place shemachrizin, because if a place she'ain machrizin, then there's nothing to talk about, but in a place shemachrizin, why are you allowed to give the thigh uncut to the guy when there's a possibility he might make a couple of superficial cuts in it and it'll look superficially like the gid anosha was removed and a Jew is not going to realize? The answer is no. Actually, we can understand our Mishnah as talking about either kind of place. A place where they do make announcements and a place where they don't make announcements.
You need these both.
In both cases, you can make our Mishnah work for both of those situations. You could say the Mishnah is talking about a place where they make announcements. What about the concern that you're going to give the whole thigh to a guy and he's going to make a cut in it and it's going to look superficially as if the gid anosha was removed? No problem, because chitucha de'ovid kechavim made the yediyah. Because the way that a guy cuts it is distinguishable from the way a Jew cuts it. When a Jew cuts open a thigh of an animal to remove the gid anosha, he cuts it in a different way than a goy does. A goy is going to make a superficial cut, basically. A Jew is going to have to dig in because we said he has to remove the entire gid anosha. And therefore, if the goy makes a cut in the leg, we'll see the difference. It's not the same kind of thing. Exactly. So other kinds of things where goyim might cut meat the same as Jews, that's a problem. But over here, where each of them cut it different ways, then it's not a problem. Rashi actually brings that his Rebbe was soimach on this, that he did exactly that. That there somebody sent a leg of an animal to another yid, but he had it. He gave it to a goyish courier to bring. He didn't put a chos, he didn't put a seal on it like you usually do when you put meat when you send meat with goyim. And Rashi's Rebbe said that it's kosher as long as it's cut the way that Jews cut to cut out the gid anosha, because a goy is not going to be able to copy that so easily. Okay, Tosfos says maybe it's still not a chiladikah thing to do. It's maybe only b'diavad, but okay. Anyway,
it's recognized when it's cut according.
When it's cut the way a Jew cuts it, it's very recognizable. There's less of a problem that a goy is going to figure out that kind of thing and then start copying it. So we could understand the Mishnah that way. So we're talking about a place the Machriz in. Okay. So therefore, in other words, in such places, most of the time, Jews are able to buy meat from Goyim. What about the Goy might make a cut? A cut, the way the Goy makes it is going to look different than the way that a Jew makes in order to remove the Gid Anosha. So therefore, it'll be very obvious to the second Jew who buys it that there's a Gid Anosha in it, and then he has to remove it. The other way we could understand it is that our Mishnah might be talking about a place where they don't make announcements. So when there are nevelos or trefus that were in the shlachtos that day, they don't make any announcements. They just sell indiscriminately. They just sell that to goyim without making any announcements. In such cases, you're asking, then how are you ever able to buy meat from a goy in such a place? The answer is in that case, then why are you not allowed to give the goy a cut thigh with a cut in it with the gid anosha not removed? Why are you only able to give him a whole one? So a whole one, we understand, you can give him because in such places Jews are not going to buy from goyim. But why is the Mishnah implying then that you can't give him one that has a superficial cut in it? The reason is gzeira shemiyit nenolad b'fnei Yisrael achar. Yes, we make a gzeira because the first Jew might give it to the goy in the presence of another Jew, and the second Jew is then going to buy it from the goy because he figures, okay, well, obviously, if a Jew sold it to a goy and the first Jew who sold it wasn't himself a butcher, it must be a kosher piece of meat. So in that case, I can buy it from the goy. And he won't realize the gid anosha wasn't removed because he won't pay attention necessarily to the difference between a superficial cut and a deep cut. Even though there is that difference, like we just said, he might not pay attention.
If the Jew is present with the goy when he gives him the limb, the yid, the cut...
Then what happens is the first Jew may leave after having given it to the guy, now the second Jew is going to say, okay, I can buy it from the guy. It's obviously a kosher piece of meat. And he's going to look and see there's a cut in it. Look, even the first Jew took the trouble to remove the gidanosha. And he's not going to pay attention that it's only a superficial cut and there's no actual gidanosha removed.
But how could the first Jew then, in the presence of the second Jew, without taking the gidanosha, can give it to the guy?
Why not? A guy's allowed to eat a gidanosha.
Not the problem. The problem is... Because a Jew...
That's the point. That is why the Mishnah is telling us that you can't give him one that has a cut in it, precisely for that reason, because it may mislead the second Jew. So therefore, you can only give it to the guy where there's no cut in it at all, because then if a second Jew buys it, it's going to be very obvious that there was no cut in it, and that he has to... And then he has... Then he knows there's a Gidanosha. He knows there's a Gidanosha in there. He can't kid it. He can't fool himself about it. Okay. The Iboisema, or another possibility, that we could say there's another reason why the Mishnah is telling us that you can't give a guy a thigh that has a cut in it, never mind the whole question of whether another Jew is going to buy it or not. The reason is, Mishnah Dekav Gonev Leila Daite. The reason is because you're doing Gnevis Das to the guy. Gnevis Das is you're misleading him. Namely, if you give him a piece of meat, if you give him a thigh that has a cut in it, the guy is going to think, look how much this yid likes me. He even went to the trouble of taking out the gidanosha from this piece of meat, which is very troublesome, before he gave it to me. Meanwhile, you didn't do that. You didn't. You just made a superficial cut and then make it look like that. So that would be gnevis das. Because in fact, we find that Shmuel says you're not allowed to do gnevis das of anybody. Yes, and even if the other person is a goy, there's no difference in this regard between a Jew and a goy. With that said, you have mafoshim who learn that maybe gnevis das of a Jew is daraisa, and maybe gnevis das of a goy is only d'rabbanan. But whatever it is, Shmuel is telling us either way, it's also. However, the Gemara says v'ha d'Shmuel lav kader shishmar. Shmuel actually never said this in so many words. Explicitly, that you're not allowed to be going to das of a guy. Elami Kwala Yitma. We deduce it from a story involving Shmuel. Namely, does Shmuel have a ka'over b'mabra? Shmuel one time was traveling on a ferry. Amale l'shame paisei l'mabure. So he tells his attendant, pay the ferryman. Paisei means like appease him, like give him his payment, maybe also a tip, whatever. Anyway. Taisei v'ikvad. So his attendant, his shamish, gave the ferryman, who was a guy, something, and Shmuel was upset.
Ikvad
means he was upset at what the shamish had done, that the shamish had followed Shmuel's instructions, but not properly. My time at ikvad, so now we have to figure out, why was Shmuel machbid? Why was he upset at the shamish? So the reason is, Amar Abaya, Tanagolas Trefa Havoi, what happened is that the Shamish was holding a chicken that was Trefa.
Right.
The Yavin, Nialeb Mer de Shchuta. He gave it to the ferryman at pretending that it was one that had been shechted that was kosher. So Rashi explains, in other words, either way it was shechted, but the point is, it was Trefa before it was shechted, so for Jews it's not allowed to be eaten, for Goyim it is, because they don't have the mitzvah of Trefa, but nevertheless, it's still Gnevis, that's the Gemara is assuming. Why would Shmuel be upset? Because it's Gnevis now, because you're making the Goy think that you gave him something which is more valuable to you, it's a Shchuta Kshera, that you yourself could have eaten, and instead you're being nice and giving it to him, and meanwhile it was a Trefa. Okay, Tosfos says actually it's not even an issue that another Jew might buy from him, because if you were allowed to do gnevis das, then you wouldn't be a problem another Jew being able to buy it anyway, because you might the other Jew would have to say to himself, you know, this first Jew said that it's shechted, but really that may be that he's trying to be going of das, so I better not buy it. But since you're not allowed to be going of das, then you have the problem that another Jew might buy it. So that proves the point that you can't be goyin of das of the guy. So therefore, so we see, if Shmuel was upset at the shamish, it means you're not allowed to do gnevis das, because he gave him a tray for chicken and pretending as though it was kosher. Rava says a different version of what happened. Anapka amar lei lashkuye. Shmuel had told the shamish that he should compensate or tip or whatever the ferryman by giving him anapka, which is a cup of undiluted wine, a small cup of undiluted wine. But that's what he told him. Va'ashkei chamra maziga, and instead he gave him wine that was diluted. And the goy, again, the goy is under the impression, apparently it's gnevis das. Apparently what it is a nafka is a small cup, we find in different places in Shas. Apparently what it is when you give a small cup, like a kelishkol like that, the assumption is that it's yayin chai. The assumption is that it's undiluted wine. So he gave it to him in a small cup and in a napkin like that to the guy. He thinks that it's undiluted wine, and meanwhile he's getting the cheap stuff. He's getting it's 2 or 3 parts water. So that's also Geneva Stout. Apparently he would, and therefore it's Geneva Stout. So therefore we see from that
he would not.
Well, he may not have realized at the moment, but nevertheless, it was Geneva Stout. You're pretending to him that you're giving him something better than you're actually giving him.
Yes,
fine. So it's Geneva Stout in Hebrew. So the point is, Shmuel never actually said in so many words, you weren't allowed to be going of Das of this guy, but we can deduce it from the story. Okay, so the Gemara asks Vechima Klolamai, okay, why is it important to point out that we're deducing it from the story? Either way, it's a valid deduction. Yeah, a lot of times we find in Shas that the Gemara will say that a certain Tana or a certain Amorah said something, and really it means we deduced it from something that he said or something that we did. So why is it important for us to know that this is only Miklola and that Shmuel never said these words? The reason is because you could argue that maybe, after all, it's not necessarily because of Geneva Stas. Maybe the inference is wrong. Because Lamanda Oma Trefa Boy, because according to the first version, that Abaya is saying that it was a tray for chicken and he gave it to the ferryman pretending that it was a kosher chicken, you could argue there's a different reason why Shmuel was upset. Because Shmuel may have been upset, because he's effectively saying to the Shamash, am I Tasha Isura? Why are you bothering keeping by you something that's author? What are you doing with a tray for chicken in the first place, which somebody could end up thinking you're carrying it around that must be kosher and then buy it or take it or whatever from you, and then you yourself might forget and eat it. So maybe that's why Shmuel was upset at him, because what are you doing carrying around that you're keeping around a tray for chicken, right? Lamanda
could also be misconstrued.
No, but in other words, it's not a matter of Gneva's Das of the Goy necessarily. It's a matter of but the point is that it's a michshol for Jews b'chlal. In other words, no proof of Gneva's Das about a Goy.
One second.
No proof that there's an issue of Gneva's Das with a Goy. Right, that's the point. We're trying to prove that Shmuel holds that you're not allowed to be Goy of Das of a Goy, but not necessarily is this a valid inference over here. Maybe Shmuel would have been upset for a different reason, because what are you doing? Carrying around a treifa, which could be a michshol. A stumbling block. Other Jews, you or other Jews, can end up eating it by mistake. Lamanda Omer Anatka, and according to the other version that Shmuel had told the Shamash to give the guy a small cup of undiluted wine,
right.
Then why would he be upset if instead he gave him diluted wine? We're assuming that it's because of Gneva's Das, but not necessarily.
Not necessarily
is it because of Gneva's Das. Because the fact is, Omer Le Lashkuya Anatka Chaya Mashma, because he's saying, when I tell you to give him Anatka, it implies undiluted wine. You didn't listen to me. Maybe, in other words, Shmuel is not upset because of the Gneva Stas. Maybe he's just upset. Well, you're supposed to listen to what I told you to do X and instead you didn't do it. So not necessarily can we prove from that. So it's only Miklala. It's not the Feirish. We can't necessarily say as an ironclad thing that Shmuel holds this. Okay. Fine, but now the Gemara is going to go on to talk for a little while about... But now the Gemara is going to go and talk more about this matter of Gnevis Das in general and with various specific examples. The halacha is halacha. The halacha is indeed that you're not allowed to be going of Das Abrius, Jews or Goyim, yes. Okay. Tanya, Hoyer Rav Meir, let's talk more about this matter of Gnevis Das. Rav Meir says, Al Yisarhev Odom L'Chaver L'Lisadeh. So a person should not plead with or pester with his friend to eat by him, the idea by Shane is started, when he knows that guy never accepts invitations to a meal, because that's also Gnevis Das, because the other guy thinks you're really sincere about it. You, meanwhile, are thinking, like this, I have the credit for trying to invite him, and like this, I don't actually have to spend money on it, because he's not going to accept the invitation anyway, and that's Gnevis Das.
What's the point of doing that?
The point is, that's the point, in other words, you want that he should think better of you. You want, like this, people,
well,
he and other people.
Okay,
listen. Reuven is saying to Shimon over and over, please come and eat by me. He knows Shimon never accepts such invitations. Why would Reuven be doing it? Because he wants. First of all, he wants Shimon to think, what a great guy that Reuven is. He really wants to be a Machnes Arda. Other people also, he's thinking that Levi and Yehuda and anybody else, look what a wonderful guy that Reuven is, what a big Machnes. And meanwhile, Reuven is thinking to himself, talk is cheap. What a low life. Talk is cheap. You know what? Here, I can say I'm inviting. I know I'm not going to have to follow through with it because I know Shimon's not going to accept the invitation anyway. That's the name of that.
People do that nowadays.
Yeah.
If you know you're not going to accept it, there's not much in Gneva Stas.
There is Gneva Stas because other people may not realize it, and even Shimon himself.
He didn't steal anything.
Okay, Gneva Stas means that you're stealing somebody's thoughts. It means you're misleading somebody else. Shimon and other people are thinking that you're doing it out of the generosity of your heart, when really you're not. When really you, if Shimon were to take you up on it, you would be, uh-oh, now I have to get together. Yeah. Okay.
I don't see the issue invited.
Okay, I'll explain later.
It's generosity of the heart. No, you invite.
No. The point is, you have to invite means you really plan to follow through on it. That you're not doing it insincerely, that I'm only doing it because I know I'm talking to somebody who anyway is not going to accept it.
When you give tzedakah and it's not from your heart, you're not used to the tzedakah, you're saying?
Okay. You're giving regardless. Is the only accepting it? That's fine. Here we're talking about, he know that Shimon is not going to accept it. So therefore, don't be giving the invitation in the first place when you're just doing it in order to look good in his eyes.
There's a lot of people you shouldn't send invitations to.
That's fine. Okay. Look, you want here. Let's read the Rashi. Lo yisar, lo yachtzibar. You don't plead with the other person to accept the invitation. Hoyo v'yadeya shelo yachtzibar. Since anyway you know he's not going to do it, mishum d'goynev daite, because you're doing gneva staff. L'hachtzik lo tovim b'chinam. You're making that the other guy is going to feel like he owes you one for nothing. Because, and really it's nothing, because Sagar Shemin Amlev Mesadav Lekain. He thinks you're really doing it sincerely, and really you're doing it insincerely. So that's the problem. That's gneva staff. Also, by the same logic, don't be sending and offering a person presents when you know that he's not going to accept it. Same idea. You're making yourself look good. No, Mishloach Manas, he'll accept it. Okay, if they don't accept, that's it. Look, I mean, okay. All right, so then I guess don't offer him. I don't know. Well, you know what? The Gemara is going to say soon that if it's a matter of covered to the person, then that's different. So if it's for the covered of the, if it's for the covered of the Oirach, for example, in this case of the person you're sending Shloach Manas to, that you want to show the public that this person is an
anything.
No, if it's let's say you're doing it in order that people should realize, look what a great guy this is. Look how many people are offering him Shloach Manas. That's different.
That's not good.
That is good. That's fine, because then you're doing it for his covered. You're not doing it for you. The question is whether you're doing it for your covered or for his covered.
I'm not doing it for covered. I'm doing it for mitzvah first.
Fine, but so then you give to other people. But if you know somebody that, okay, fine. Also, another example is, don't open up a barrel of wine for somebody which has been already sold to the storekeeper, unless you inform the guest. Again, what it is like this. So like this, you have a guest comes, an important guest comes, you open up a new barrel so that you can give him good fresh wine. Now, let's say, for example, you sold a barrel of wine to the storekeeper, that he's going to take it and sell it retail in the store. You haven't yet brought it over to the store. It's still by you. The storekeeper has already paid money, done mashicha or whatever it is exactly, but it's still by you. Don't open it up for a guest, because, again, it's a matter of gneva das. Marshall points out it's gneva for a different reason, because it already belongs to the storekeeper. Rashi explains over here it's a matter of more, again, of gneva das, because the guest doesn't realize that you sold this to the storekeeper. He thinks, look how much this guy is willing to suffer a loss, that he's opening a fresh bottle of wine for me and the rest of it is going to go sour faster, and he doesn't realize that you're just going to give him one little bit of it and then you're going to bring the rest to the storekeeper. So I guess, yeah, point to Rashi.
You've been giving him some.
So therefore, right.
I thought you were just opening it.
No, you're opening it.
Even
opening it already starts making it spoiling. That's the point. Now, even if you're not actually pouring him, but it's still gneva das, because it makes it look like you're doing it.
And
like you're
gneva.
No, if you're actually giving him some, then it would be pure gneva. That's
not.
The
fact that you open the barrel and then you stitch it
down,
it's going to spoil.
Okay, that's okay, but that's not.
You're talking about the damage.
Okay.
Do you have to open it for the shopkeeper?
No, maybe. I don't know. So, that's what Marshall says, that if you already sold to the shopkeeper, you anyway can't take anything out of it without permission of the shopkeeper, and therefore when you open it, making it look as though you want to serve this guy, then it's gneva's das. Unless you inform him that I'm doing it in order to show you in order to show you honor, then it would be allowed. And apparently, I guess the deal is that the shopkeeper knows you might open it before you give it to him. Okay, fine. So it is gneva's das again, unless you tell the guest that this is actually sold to the shopkeeper and I'm opening it in your honor.
Then it's okay.
But that's, again, you're not stealing from the shopkeeper because you didn't actually take anything from it. It's an understanding with the shopkeeper. Okay, but it's an understanding with the shopkeeper that you can do that. The lo yomaloi such shemen metacherek. On another example, don't tell the guest.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay, can you ask a question later? I'm not directly negayas, but I'm understanding the Gemara. We're you know. On another example, don't give somebody an empty bottle and tell them here is some oil to smear on your skin. When again you know that he's not the type to do that anyway, because again it's Gneva Saf, he thinks you're really offering him oil. The imbishro kvoidei mutter, unless in all these cases, if it's for his covered, then it's mutter. So the question is, Aini, is that so as far as the case of the barrel of wine that was sold to the shopkeeper? Vaha ula ikla lebe Rabbi Yehuda, but we find that ula visited the house of Rabbi Yehuda, pasach lechavi asamachoras lechenbeni, and Rabbi Yehuda took a barrel of wine that had been sold to the shopkeeper and opened it up in honor of ula. So therefore it's allowed. The answer is, number one, one possibility is that Rabbi Yehuda indeed informed Ula, you should know I'm not actually suffering a loss from this because I already sold it to the shopkeeper. That's fine. We said already the shopkeeper allows it. And second of all, we said already in the Brisa, Elim Kain Hadir. So if he informs him, it's allowed. The Boisema, another possibility, Shiny Ula, Dechaviv Leila Rabbi Yehuda. Another possibility is different. Ula really was very important and very precious to Rabbi Yehuda. Regardless, even if it was Rabbi Yehuda's own barrel that he hadn't sold, he would have opened a fresh barrel in honor of Ula. So therefore, it's not Gnevis Daf to open up a barrel in his honor, because you would have done it anyway. It's only when you're trying to do it on the cheap, when you're only doing it with a barrel that anyway doesn't belong to you, so you figure you don't have to absorb the loss, whereas Rabbi Yehuda would have done it for Ula anyway, because he really liked Ula. Okay. Turn it up on him. We learn in a Braise. There are more such cases.
If you really like and honor someone and you want to give him wine from a barrel that has already been sold to someone else,
as long as it's been arranged with the other, with somebody else, as long as somebody else knows that you're going to do that, then yeah. Turn it up on a loyelach adam lebeisa evil. A person should not go to the house of an avil ubiyade login amiskashkes when he's holding a bottle of wine or whatever that's not completely full. Amiskashkes means that the liquid is sloshing around in it, because again it's gnevas daf. People are going to think that it's full, and then really it's not. Again, you're trying to make yourself look better than you are. That's gnevas daf. Marsha says a little bit differently, that what it is later on, the oval is not going to remember whose bottles he drank from and who he didn't. He's going to think that he actually drank from yours, and that's why it's only half full. Why not? An oval has to eat and drink, doesn't he?
Drink wine?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, you have a Gemara in Psobus that mentions they used to serve an oval a certain number of cups of wine in order to help him forget his, yeah. Anyway, the point is, that okay, so you're not allowed to do that again. The name is that.
An oval can drink wine?
Yeah. Also, you shouldn't fill up the bottle with water instead of wine, because again, you're doing Gneva Stas. You're making it look like you're bringing him wine, and really all you're bringing him is water. Okay, but it's nevertheless Gneva Stas if he doesn't open the bottle until he opens the bottle, whatever. But if there is in that city, if you have chever ir, which is there's a rabbin, Rashi explains, there are many people who are coming to visit the oval, and therefore this person is bringing a bottle so that people will say, look how important this oval is. This person is showing him honor by bringing him wine. Then it's mutter, because you're doing it for the covered of the oval. So it's like we said before,
even when it's partially empty.
Yeah, because then you're doing it not so much because you want the oval personally to think, look, this guy is bringing me is such a good friend of mine, he's bringing me a whole bottle of wine. Adadabi, you're doing it for the covered of the oval, so other people will say, look how important this oval is, that many people are bringing him wine and other such gifts. And that way more people will be impelled to give him covered, which is good.
But that's something that you said if
there's a chever ir, so if you have many people that are visiting the oval, and therefore you have like this, it'll make them think more of the oval, then yeah. But if it's a one-on-one thing, then
if
not.
If you're offering a bottle that's not empty, how can they think better and more?
Because they think that, because they don't know what's in the bottle. The oval. They don't know it's half empty. It's not a glass bottle. It's an earthenware bottle or whatever. They don't know how much is in it. If they knew how much is in it, there wouldn't be Gneva's Daf. It's the same thing. If you put water, wine in a, if you put water instead of wine, there's no Gneva's Daf. It's a clear bottle. We're talking about it, so it's an earthenware bottle. Okay. Yeah, so if there's a chever ir, then it's mutter, because then you're doing it for the honor of the oval. So other people will see how important this oval is. And that way they'll be impelled to honor him more. A person should not sell a sandal, a pair of sandals to somebody else that are made from leather, that are made from the skin of an animal that died on its own. and claim b'chlal shel chayei shchuta with the claim that comes from a regular animal that was shechted, that was healthy and that was shechted. It's gneivas das mipnei shnei dvarim. There are actually two reasons. Mipnei beis dvarim for two reasons actually. Aleph mipnei shemateiru. Number one, it's gneivas das because he thinks you're selling him something more expensive or giving him something more expensive or whatever. And number two, the echad mipnei sakana. And the other reason is because the sakana involved because the animal died. It may have died because of a snake bite, and then that means there may be venom in the leather, and the person is going to put on the shoe. Okay, but it's still a possibility. In fact, actually, you have there's a tshuva for him. Okay, but it could be. And actually, Rav Moshe has a tshuva about it where he talks about the idea is that first of all, we're talking about when you're selling it versus when you're giving it. And second of all, the idea is basically if you tell him that it's from a mesa, but you tell him, let's say, it's from a mesa, but the animal didn't die of a snake bite, it died of something else, at least you're giving the guy the option. He has the option to believe you or not. Most likely, you're right, and it is a very slight chance that there is venom in there. But if you don't tell him, if you claim that it was from Chayei Shchuta, then you're not even giving him that option. So that's the point of it. Okay. Also, v'lo yishaga adam l'chaver chavis shoyai, and a person shouldn't send somebody else a barrel of wine, the shemen safalpia, where there's oil floating on top of the wine, because then it looks superficially as though it's a barrel full of oil. And therefore, what's going to happen is he's going to invite guests to a meal, and you need oil over there to prepare the food, and people smear oil on their skin or whatever, and it turns out he doesn't have, and then he's going to be embarrassed. In fact, it happened one time that somebody did that. He sent somebody else as a present a barrel of wine with oil floating on top of it. So the guy thought he had received a barrel of oil. So he went and invited guests. And you have a whole bunch of guests there, and they're expecting that there's going to be oil. And they all came. Now the balabas opened up the barrel and discovered, after all, that most of it is wine. And he was so embarrassed that he strangled himself. Because he didn't have it. The way we have it in the Gemara over here, apparently the idea is that he needed oil. For whatever purposes, they need oil to light the lamps. They need oil to smear on their skin as they use as sunscreen and as insect repellent and for many other purposes and whatever. And like this, he doesn't have. So yeah, they could drink wine, but it's not the same thing. He expected to be serving them a meal and that there would be oil involved. Although, with that said, the Torah Chaim actually learns the other way around. He says, I mean, if he thought the whole thing was oil, you use oil to prepare the meal. So long before the guests come, the meal, he would have already opened it up and started preparing the meal. So he learns the other way around, that the balabas thought that the whole thing is wine. So he invited the people over to drink wine, and now it turns out that he has, now he's in. So what it does, it really was mostly wine, but he saw only the top layer of oil, mistakenly thought the whole thing was oil, and then ended up committing suicide thinking it. Another din, ve'ena ochen rashoin litin nimashal etneim libnoyu labitish abalabayis. Guests who are guests by a person's house are not allowed to take some of the food that's in front of them and give it to the children of the balabas. Elayim kein not l'rashos mi balabayis, unless they got permission from him, because there may not be enough food. There may not be. There may just be barely enough food for them, and then the balabas is going to be embarrassed that if they're giving to the kids, then he's going to feel there's not enough left for them. So this din is brought in Shulchan Aruch, although the Mefarshim say it's really only if you're talking about the kind of meal where there's barely enough food for everybody. If you're talking about a regular meal nowadays where there's plenty of food for everybody, then it's not such an issue.
The guests are giving to the
balabas. In other words, the balabas is serving a portion to the guest. The guest wants to give a little bit of it to the kid, to the balabas' kids. Wow. Don't do that unless you ask the balabas first to make sure that there's enough. But again, the Mishnah Berurah on these halachas brings that if you have enough food over there, enough food, that's not such a problem. Although he brings from an earlier sefer called Shemin Rekeach was machmer even in that case.
Why would they give to the kids? Because
the kids weren't necessarily given a portion. Not only to his own children, only to the children of the balabas, of the host. And in fact, there was such a case. It happened one time that somebody invited three guests during a year of drought, so there wasn't very much food to go around. All he was able to afford to put in front of them was three egg size of food. So then this son of the Balabos came in, and the guest felt bad for him. So Nokal Echaman Chelka Vinosnoloi. So one of the guests took his portion and gave it to the kid. V'chein Sheni V'chein Shlishi. And the same one, the second one and the third one did the same. They figured we can do more without food than the kid. Well, what ended up happening? Ba Aviv Shaltina. Soon the father of this kid comes in. Motish Oizik Echad B'tir B'shnayim B'shnayim B'yodei. He sees the kid is holding Oizik. Rashi says Moshin Soger. He has like closed his mouth closed around one piece of the food, and the other two are in his hands. And he was so upset, he was so angry, thinking that the kid had taken it himself from the guest,
not knowing
that the guest had given it to him. He banged the kid down on the ground, and the kid died. Then the mother saw what happened, and she was so overwrought. Also, the gag would not flow, so that she went up to the roof and fell off and also died. And then the Balabas himself was also the Balabas was so overwrought that his...
The guest was the first one to die?
No. The kid was the first one.
The kid
was the first one, then the mother, and then the father. Ahu alolagag v'nafal mes. He also went up onto the roof and fell off and died. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, al dovers nenergu gimul nefashis miYisrael. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, look at this. Because of a situation like this, three Jews were killed. So the question is, my kamash malon, what is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov telling us? We can count. There were three people who were killed. What's Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov adding? The answer is, the kula Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. You should know the entire braisa is said by Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. He says the whole story, and he gives us the punchline that you should realize that what a serious thing this is, that here, because of a misunderstanding like that, three Jews ended up getting killed. So therefore, that's the reason for this halacha.
Does it make sense that the Balabas would host guests during a famine, that his kids are starving?
It's a good question. I don't know. It's a good question. Maybe. I don't know. Whatever it is, yeah. I don't know. It's also a bit of an overreaction of the father to stomp the kid down like that, and for him and his wife to throw themselves off the roof. But again, if it was Vishnei Batsaris, probably nobody is thinking clearly at a time like that. I don't know. We learn in a bright. So getting back to the halacha we said in the Mishnah about sending a thigh to a goy, that we said in the Mishnah you can send it to him when it's whole, because then the fact that the gedan noshen is very obvious, but not when it's cut, either because he may resell it to a Jew or because of gneva staff. So let's talk about that. Shaleach yerech l'chaveir shlema. When a person is sending to his friend, meaning to a fellow Jew, a thigh of an animal, if it's whole, ain't it tzarech shiyotolehem en a gid anosha. He doesn't have to first take out the gid anosha for the same reason, because it will be very obvious to the recipient. It will be very obvious that there's still a gid anosha in there, and that he's responsible to take it out. But if there's a cut in it, then he does have to take out the gidanosha, because again, the other Jew may be careless and think, and we saw before, that people can get careless about gidanosha, and therefore he's going to think, okay, it's already been removed and not bother checking. When it comes to giving it to a guy, whether it's cut or whether it's whole, you don't have to take off the gidanosha. Now, why is that? We said before that if it's cut, the Mishnah seemed to say that you do have to. So we'll get to that soon. We'll talk about that soon. But first, let's finish the b'raisa. There are two reasons why the Chachamim said that you're not allowed to sell nevelos or treifas to goyim unless you inform him that it's treifa. Now, if you don't inform him, you have a problem of gneivas das.
What's the difference between treifas?
For the same reason as we said before. Because for the same reason as we said before, it's ferryman. No, the problem isn't just that he will sell it to the Jew. Like we have the case of Shmuel and the ferryman and the chicken. The problem is it's gnevus das. The goy is thinking, the Jew is giving me something that he himself could have eaten, and he's turning around and giving it to me. So like this,
if you tell him, you know what, we cannot use it, he's going to think that
that's the Gemara's going to. No, it's not necessarily a chil Hashem, but you do have a point, and the Gemara is going to talk about that in Omud Beis. The Gemara is going to talk about that point later on Omud Beis, how we avoid that issue. It's not even a matter of not good enough. Again, for example, nowadays that we don't generally do nikur, we sell the whole back half of the animal to goyim. So effectively, what it is we're telling them we can't eat it, so we're selling it to you. It's not done as in an insulting way, like it's a substandard meat or whatever. So we'll see on Omud Beis. We'll talk about that point. But okay, fine. But first, anyway, the point is, you do have to inform him that it's treifa. So for two reasons. Echad mepnei shemaseihu. Number one, gneivas das. Ve'echad shema yaksevim kerena liyisrael achar. And the other reason is because he may resell it to another Jew. Again, here we're talking about a place That's a, again, either Rashi explains, we're talking about the, if, so if you informed him, then it can either be a place that Ein Machriz in, where they anyway don't make announcements when there's Nevelos or Tresvis, so therefore there's no problem that he's going to resell it to a Jew, and in a place of Machriz in, when it was on a day when they made Achraza, then anyway, then also a Jew is not going to be buying it from him. So therefore, as long as you inform the Goy that it's a Trefa to avoid the issue of Gnevis Das, and you exactly that. You tell them it's a Trefa. We Jews are not allowed to eat it. Yeah. Okay. But also, a Jew should not tell a Goy, here's a dinner and buy me some meat with this dinner. And again, there are two reasons, there are two problems of doing that. One is because of the tough guys, the extortionists, meaning, in other words, Rashi says, the Goy may be an anas, he may be one of these kinds of people who he'll keep the dinner, and then he'll keep the dinner, he'll go to the butcher and demand the dinner's worth of meat, and then not pay him. And once he's out of your sight, you don't know what he's doing, so he may go and threaten the butcher or whatever and force him to give him a dinner's worth of meat, and then he'll pocket the dinner for himself. So that's one reason.
Well, that's not really
a
problem.
Okay, but it's still a problem. You have to try to avoid the issue. And number two, the other reason is because the butcher may sell the goy nevelos atreifus, and he'll bring it back to you, and you're, yeah, okay.
Why don't you give the second reason the most important last, and the first reason the exception?
Each reason is important. You know what?
The second is much more important than the first.
That depends how you look at it. Choshen mishpat is no less important than Yerodea. So to make sure that the butcher doesn't suffer a loss of a dinner is an important point also. So now let's analyze this braisa. We said if you're selling the thigh to a goy, whether it's whole or whether there's a cut in it, you don't have to take out the gidanasha. So again, we have to figure out what's the scenario. B'maya skin. Ilema b'mokam shemachrizin. Again, are we talking about one of those places where whenever there's a nevelo or trefa that happened that day, they make an announcement, and therefore Jews know not to buy meat that day from goyim because they may end up buying a nevelo or trefa? Well, then, in such a place, chatucha amai ain't a tzarech litzalaymena gidanasha. So why should you not have to take out the gidanasha before you give it to the goy? Given to like Achruz, again, if it's whole, then fine, there's no problem. Because obviously a Goy is going to know, because obviously a Jew is going to know there's still a Gid Anosh. But if there's a cut in it, then, and we said that, a Jew may see the cut and think that the whole Gid Anosh was removed. So why should you not have to take it out? Given to like Achruz, given that there was no Achruz, or there was no announcement that particular day, Osila Mizban Mineh, Jews may end up buying it from him and mistakenly think the Gid Anosh was taken out. So isn't that a problem?
Why is we say that there's no need to take the Gid Anoshe out?
That's the question.
Without
why
Hazard,
we're saying that's the question. Exactly. If we're talking about a place where there is a Hachraza, whenever there's an Avelo today, but today no Hachraza was made. So fine, you can sell the guy a whole uncut thigh and then there's no problem, because even if a Jew buys it from him, he'll know there's a Gid Anoshe. But if it's cut, don't you have the problem that we said before, that a Jew is going to think the Gid Anoshe was removed?
You can,
but not necessarily is another Jew going to be so careful to bother noticing. You will be careful, but not necessarily can you trust that another Jew will. Okay, so obviously it has to be a place where no announcements are made, and therefore, if no announcements are made, then anyway, Jews are not buying meat from goyim. So therefore, even whether there's a cut in it or not, doesn't matter. A Jew's not going to be buying this piece of meat from a goy, because he never knows whether it might be a shreifa. It
cannot be a case where there is a
chazah. Whether all hachrozah is supposed to be made, and that day no hachrozah was made. Exactly. Okay. So far, so good. But ema metziasa. But then look at the next part. Look at the middle part of the braisa. We said mitnei shnei dvarim omru ein merchan nevelos atreifas la'ir tichavim. We said there are two reasons that you can't sell nevelos atreifas to a goy without informing him that it was a nevelo or a treifa. Echad mitnei shematehu. One we said is because of gnevis das, because you're tricking him. Matehu meloshin tos. You're causing him to make a mistake. The echad shema yachsevim kerenal yisrael acher. And the other reason is because he might turn around and sell it to another Jew. Well, if we're talking about a place where no announcements are ever made, and therefore Jews are not buying meat from goyim, what's the problem? No Jew is going to buy it from him, because he never knows whether it might be a nevela or a trefa. So who cares? Fine, you have to tell the goy that it's a trefa because of gnevis das. But why would there be the problem that he might resell it to a Jew, and the Jew is going to buy it from him? There's
Just
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Ela pshita b'makom shemacharizin. Okay, so that second case evidently has to be talking about a place where announcements are being made. And that particular day, there was no announcement. Well, okay, so far, in other words, so far, the bride is inconsistent. One part is talking about she'en machrizin, one part is talking about shemachrizin. Eima sefer, and then look at the third part of the bride. Lo yoma adam lo'ev t'chavim kachli b'dinner zebos. So don't tell a guy, here's a dinner, buy me some meat. Mifnei shnei dvarim, and again, we said two reasons. Echa mifnei ha'anothin. Number one, because of the extortionist, because he may go and extort meat out of the butcher and not pay him. The echa b'shem ha'moichon lo'y nevelos ha'trefas. And the other reason, because the butcher may sell him nevelo ha'trefa. Now, if we're talking about, we said the second case of the Mishnah is talking about Mokum Shemachrizin. If it's a place where Machrizin, where they make such announcements, whenever there's an available Trefa available for sale, well, he is said to have a Trefa, Achruz, they have a Machrizin. If there had been a Trefa that day, they would have made an announcement.
No problem.
So there shouldn't be a problem. Elop Shittim Mokum Shein Machrizin. So obviously that third case of the Braisa must be talking about where there's no announcements, where there's a place where they don't make announcements.
So
that's the problem. The first and the third case seem to be in a case where they don't make announcements, where they sell nevelos v'trefas without informing the public, and the middle case is talking about where they do. That's very inconsistent. Reisha v'seifa. So what are we going to say? Reisha v'seifa makom shein machrizin mitzias the makom shein machrizin. Amar Abaya, Abaya says, "Ain." Yes, that's in fact the answer. Reisha v'seifa makom shein machrizin mitzias the makom shein machrizin. Sure. The Braisa doesn't necessarily have to be consistent. Different parts of it can be talking about different scenarios. Okay, but we're meant to understand, once we understand how it works, where what they do when they are machrizin and what they do when they're not, then it'll be clear. Then we'll deduce automatically what the Braisa is talking about. Tosfos does point out that Abaya and also Rava and also Rav Ashi, who are going to be discussing in the Gemara over here, may hold, like we said, we mentioned at the beginning of the sugya that Jews cut the thigh differently than goyim do, because Jews remove the gidon asher completely, whereas a goy would just make a superficial cut, and therefore you could say they're following that point of view. They're following that point of view, and therefore if you have a superficial cut in it, it's going to be if you have a superficial cut, then it's obvious that it was that the gidon asher wasn't moved. Okay, Tosfos goes on to discuss the whole point at some length, though. But anyway, all right.
So because they will know when it's a cut.
So you'll know when it's cut to take the gidon asher. Right. So therefore, so the only issue is nevelos ha'trefas. So yeah. Okay. Fine. So that's Abaya's understanding. Rava on Makulub Mokum Shemachrizin. Rava says no. The entire Braisa is actually talking about places where they do make announcements. So how does he explain? So Reisha v'Seifa Sheichrizu. So the Reisha and the Seifa are talking about there was an announcement that day. There was an announcement today. There was a Tereza. That day, therefore, Jews are not buying from Goyim. Mitzias the Shaloy Chrizu. And the middle part is talking about where there was no announcement. So the first case that we said that you sell a thigh to a guy, and we're saying that if there's a cut in it, you have to take out the gidon asher. Or we say by goy, you don't have to take out the gidon asher. The reason is because we're talking about a place where that day there was an announcement made, so therefore nobody's buying from goyim that day. The second case that we said that you can't sell a nevela or a trefa to a goy unless you inform him it's a nevela or a trefa, that's talking about a place where they didn't make an announcement. So therefore,
what does it say here?
All three parts of the Braisa are talking about a place that machrizin, where they do make announcements,
usually
announcements are made. So the first and last case is the case involving selling a thigh to a goy without cutting it, or with or without cutting it, and the case about giving a goy a dinner and sending him to buy meat. Those cases are talking about that day. There was an announcement in town. There was a trade.
Okay.
Yeah. So therefore, Jews know not to buy from goy.
The middle one
is talking about that day. There was no announcement. So therefore, you have a real problem. If you sell a nevela or a trefa to a goy, a Jew is going to think he can buy because there was no announcement. Right. Rav Ashi, I'm a kol b'machum she'ein machrizin. Rav Ashi says the other way around. The entire braisa is talking about a place where they don't make announcements, Reisha and umetziasa. So why is it in the middle case? In the middle case, then why is there a problem if you anyway don't make announcements? In those places, Jews are anyway not buying meat from goyim because it might be nevela or trefa. The middle case is again, like we said before, zeder shamim kurenu b'fnei Yisrael. But the problem is he may sell the meat to the goy in the presence of another Jew, and that other Jew didn't hear the first Jew say that it's trefa, that he thinks it's kosher. And then he may buy it from him. So therefore,
we know that place has no announcement, why would a Jew buy it?
Again, if he sees, like we said at the beginning of the story, if he sees that a Jew is selling it that, to a guy, and he didn't hear him say that it's trefa, he's going to assume it's kosher. So therefore, you have to tell the guy that it's trefa, and then you've done what you can do. At that point, if another Jew buys it, that's his problem. But, yeah.
Wouldn't you have to pay the other Jew directly?
If you can, yeah, but it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be that you could have, for example, you went and sold it to the guy. Another Jew happened to be watching and you didn't notice.
So then it's not in your
presence. The point is that he was there, but you didn't notice him, let's say, and he came in afterwards. He didn't hear you say that it's Shlepa, so he thinks it's kosher.
If he was there and you were there, you had to go to this Jew and say...
If you knew he was there, but you didn't necessarily.
That's what I'm saying. It's not in his presence.
Okay, he was there, but you didn't see him. He was there, but you didn't see him. Therefore, you have to tell the guy that it's trefa, and then you've done what you can. At that point, if a Jew goes and buys it, think it's because he was watching and saw you sell it to him, and he didn't hear you say it was trefa, okay, there's nothing more you can do.
What do you have to tell the guy?
You tell the guy it's trefa.
Don't you tell the guy it's trefa, and if another Jew comes, you have to tell him he cannot buy?
Yeah, maybe, but that's the point. In other words, that's the point. So therefore, if you don't tell, so that's the point. That is why we're saying that you have to tell him, that you have to tell the guy that's trefa, because otherwise, if you don't tell him, another Jew is going to see you selling it without saying that it's trefa and think that it's kosher. So if you tell the guy that it's trefa, okay, yeah, you also tell the guy don't resell it to another Jew, whatever the point is, therefore, then there's no problem. In the case, Rashi says, in the case when you sent a thigh of an animal to a goy, then there's less of a problem because Rashi says that the Jew is going to end up eating it with the gid anosha because you have lots of Jews around. So here we're talking about there's a difference, in other words, Rashi says, between selling it to him in a public marketplace where you have other Jews around, versus when you send it to the goy privately, where then nobody else, you don't have to worry that somebody else saw it, and you don't have to make zeiros about that. So that's the difference. And Rashi says actually the Braisa therefore is arguing with the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said that even if you're sending it to a goy privately in his house, you do have to make a zeira, and therefore you can't sell it to him with a cut in it. The Braisa is disagreeing and saying if you're giving it to him privately in his house, then there's not a problem. Only when you're selling it in the marketplace where there are other Jews around, that's Rashi is explaining that, right? That the Braisa disagrees with the Mishnah. Yeah, according to Rashi. Okay. Heichri machrizin. What kind of announcement do we make? Rav Yitzchak bar Yosef, nafal bisrael b'nei chela. The announcement we make is that we have meat, which is available for the goy. B'nei chela literally means the army. So the question is, the layman nafal trefsa b'nei chela. Why don't you say outright that there is a trefa, which is available for the goyim? The answer is, if you actually say the word trefa, lo zabmi, they're not going to want to buy it, because then they're going to say that Jews are selling it because there's meat that they themselves want to eat. Yeah. So the question is, don't you have an issue again of gnevas das? And the answer is, in huhu de kamatu nafshayhu. In this case, it's not gnevas das, they're misleading themselves. They could ask, once you say there's meat available to sell to the goyim, they would have the responsibility to ask at that point, are we talking about kosher or trefa? So when you're selling it to him, Rashi says earlier in the Gemara, you sold it to him telling him that it's shchuta, and it's not. Or b'chezkas shchuta, whatever. There's a chazaka of it being shechted. And the same thing with all the other cases. So those are gnevas das. But over here, you're just telling him it's available for you. If he wants to find out the facts, he can ask.
At the beginning, earlier
in the sugya, you're selling him something which there's a strong assumption that it is shchuta, or you actually told him in so many words that it's shchuta. Either way, that would be gnevas das. Over here, he's just, that's what, yeah. Because we said before, gnevas das to a goy is also us, so we said that.
Why Yeah, but it's not so relevant.
That's the point. So when it's indirect, that's the point. When it's indirect over here, then we're saying that you're allowed to. So actually, that's how Rashi learns. Tosfos says what it is it's not a matter of it's not a matter really of chazaka or not. It's more that, for example, you open up a barrel for a guest, which was already sold to a shopkeeper. How common is it that you sold it to the shopkeeper already, and then you're going to open it up in his honor? Not very. Therefore, he's going to think that there's very very strong reason for him to think that you're opening it in his honor. That's Gnevas Das. Over here, the goyim should realize on their own there's a high likelihood that it's Shefa. So therefore, so somewhat different than Rashi. So either way, it amounts to that. In other words, they could have asked and they didn't bother, and therefore it's not Gnevas Das.
What I don't understand is why would it be Gnevas Das to tell a goy or not to tell a goy to sell him a trace a piece of meat?
Again, the reason why it's Gnevas Das for the goy, it doesn't matter whether it's shefa or not. However, he thinks that you're doing him an extra special thing by selling him something that you yourself could have eaten, or giving him something that you could have eaten. Especially if you're selling it, saying at the price of a shchuta or whatever. So therefore, there is Gnevas Das involved. But over here, there's not Gnevas Das because you're not, all you're doing is you're saying there's meat available for the goyim. He himself, if he wants, he could ask whether it's kosher or treif, or as Tosfos says, there's a high likelihood that it's treif, and he ought to figure that out on his own. And if he doesn't, that's his problem. And the Gemara, because
you said there's meat available.
Yeah. And well, you sold it to him ultimately,
yeah,
but right. And the Gemara will continue. We'll continue tomorrow with an example of that where there's not an issue of Gnevas Das when the other person makes an assumption on their own and you didn't that you're not obligated to correct other people's mistaken assumptions. In other words, you're not allowed to create the conditions
actively to
mislead them, but you're allowed to, you don't have to correct their misconceptions. So we'll talk about that more tomorrow, Beth Hashem.
And what's interesting is that it has never started for goy about shita.
Again, it doesn't make an accurate. It doesn't make a difference to him, but it makes a difference as far as how he perceives you. That he thinks you're better than you really are, and that's the problem.
That's the problem.
The problem.
It's not really about the shita.